Good evening.
Hello. You the manager?
I am.
Yeah. Hiya, yeah. I was just talking to...
Jane.
And she seems to think I can't pop in for a quick drink.
Really? Yeah. Do you have a reservation?
Nope. You just walked up.
I didn't just walk up. I was actually just chauffeured up in that.
In a town car?
No, that's a limousine.
Does anyone in your limousine have a reservation?
Right. Didn't want to have to mention this, but maybe I'm quite well known in the UK.
You want me to Google him?
There's no Googling. There's no need to Google.
You're famous in England? Sure. Well, we have a number of British employees. If I were to bring one down, they'd know who you are.
Yeah.
Neville, please report.
Let's just keep Neville out of it. Or, do you know what? I'm not going to jump through your hoops. I'd like you to notify your owner that you just turned away Stuart Pritchard.
Sorry, Stuart...
Pritchard!
Stuart Pritchard. I'm Googling him.
Why are you getting involved? It's nothing to do with you. Just remember that face, because you'll be apologising to it later.
Nothing on Google.
TVTL!
Okay, guys.
Yeah.
Let's take a moment right now.
Yeah, we'll take a quick moment and then we'll move on.
No, let's take a full moment.
In silence, or can we?
Moment's usually silent, so a moment starts when you shut up.
And do we close our eyes?
I don't think you need to. It's not really a prayer. Okay. It's more a moment.
This show really improves with age.
Why? Because the jokes get better?
No, because my hearing gets worse.
You don't say much, friend, but when you do, it's to the point, and I salute you for it.
Okay, T-Bone. Time for some serious crunching.
All right. Hello, good morning, and welcome, everyone, to a Tuesday edition of TBTL.
That's a tuna, bro.
The show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
Coming to you from the Nest Broadcast Center, high in the sky above Portland, Oregon, where we are looking at another nice day, but not a day where it reaches 97 degrees.
Oh, la, la.
Which I know some of our listeners in, like, you know, Arizona and stuff, they say, pish posh at your 97 degrees. But boy, it was steamy here yesterday. Today, I think it's going to be more in the 80s, which is about the right temperature for me in the summer times. This is the right episode for all of us, 3,450 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Where we have arrived. There is an online petition to ask, force, suggest that Jeff Bezos stay in space when he goes up there for a few minutes. People do not like Jeff Bezos right now. Like, intensely so. And also, speaking of Jeff Bezos going to space, I said last week that if I'm him, I'm not just going up, you know, into what is technically space for 11 minutes. I'm going to, like, Pluto. Turns out he is not even going to be in what is allegedly space for as long as we all thought.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
So we'll dig into that. Also, this is a cool story. The first active NFL player ever has come out as a gay man.
You're like the coolest person I've ever met.
And it just makes me weirdly happy. I mean, I guess it's not weird, but it's just like you've had, you know, players who are retired from the league come out. You've had players who were trying to get into the league who've come out, but you've never had somebody who's like suiting up week in and week out and running out there and playing the football who has, you know, I guess felt safe enough to say, hey, I'm a gay person. And I think it's quite cool. So we'll play his audio when we get to it. Also, there was a town in Australia that is now covered in spider webs.
He's not Spider Pig anymore. He's Harry Plopper.
Which just feels like the most Australian story I've heard in a long time. I'd believe anything that comes out of Australia in terms of wacky animal behavior and extreme conditions. So we will get into that. Plus emails, V-mails, and D-mails coming up too. All with the help of this guy, the longest running Cobro of the show, maybe best known for his depictions of the tall ships. He is Andrew.
Oh, explicit. Ooh.
Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. You
you were right last week when you said there's a team, or there was a team called the Red Storm. Very ominous name for a team.
Yeah, St. John's. I think I said that in the moment. Somebody emailed us to clarify, but I have a memory. Is everybody sitting down? I have a memory.
You have a memory of being right. That's
I just have a memory of saying that. That I think I said, that was St. John's. Because that's a pretty famous... I could be wrong. But, or maybe I just thought it on the inside of my brain. But I thought I said that it was St. John's. Because I actually have a lot of thoughts about that college. Because they had, for a time, a very, very overperforming college basketball team. Men's college basketball team. Chris Mullen went there. One-time Golden State Warrior. And... flat top enthusiast, I would say. Big Country Brian, Big Country Reeves, and Chris Mullen were the two most, like, at least white guys who really loved the flat top.
Does Chris Mullen not have a nickname? Let me look this up here.
Boy, I don't. That's a great question. I never knew him to have a nickname, but maybe he did. He was on some really good Golden State teams. Forget all this Steph Curry biz. Back in the day, you had Chris Mullen, you had Tim Hardaway Sr. Tim Hardaway Jr. plays in the NBA, which kills me because I remember his dad, Tim Hardaway. And then Chris Webber was a Golden State Warrior. They were a pretty decent team back in the day.
Well, I think, I don't know if this is good news or bad news, but it's certainly an improvement opportunity. Chris Mullen doesn't seem to have a nickname. If so, is obscure enough that it's not being listed here on his Wikipedia page, which really gives us the opportunity to nickname him. He's retired now. Is it too
Are you
late
looking at a picture of him, by the way?
No, let me click on this.
Do an image search of his playing days, and you'll see that sweet, sweet flat top that he used to. I had a flat top, by the way.
And this would be 1990s, right? Chris Mullen, 1990s. Yeah, okay.
Just do Chris Mullen, Golden State Warriors, and you can't miss it.
I did not.
He'll be the guy with a flat top.
He'll be the guy with the flat top. I did not. Now, he didn't have a mullet, did he? Because I'm really hoping for a Chris the Mullet Mullen here, because it'd just be easier on me.
I mean, opposite, like actual opposite.
Yeah, that is.
Like he was business in the front, business in the back.
Yeah. It's all business.
With Chris Mullen.
I want one of them Arnie Schwarzenegger jingle all the way cuts.
Hard, stiff, and mullet.
All right. Well, I will continue to work on nicknames. I mean, one thing I could do is a picture of him, though.
I need.
Yeah, I see it. There's
demand
one,
satisfaction.
Here's a very good one with him and a teammate. And the flat top is the most intense here. And he's making a very intense face as well. And I get, he looks like almost a wrestler with that haircut in this shot.
Yeah. That was part of my inspiration. I think I wanted to be Chris Mullen because, you know, he was a KG shooter. He was known for his jump shot.
KG.
And what's that?
Did you say KG?
Not in the Kevin Garnett style, but just KG kind of.
Oh, KG, KG. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, sorry. I thought it was a basketball term. Gotcha.
No, I remember just like, I've said this before on the show, and I hope this doesn't sound extremely weird on a sort of racial basis, but I feel like on some level I can very much understand, I certainly cannot understand the experience of people of color because I have not lived that experience, but I understand zooming in towards the people who kind of look like you and who you identify with in a situation, because I was obsessed with any semi-competent white basketball player because I was like, I'm a white guy. Most of the really good players in the NBA are not white. But if there was a player who was white, I was like extra obsessed with them, I think, because I thought, well, I could be that guy. And this is, you know, again, it's a weird thing to say because I have so much privilege. There was this one thing where most of the people that I was admiring didn't look like me. That was like the one arena in which it was happening. But like, I could give you a list of every semi-competent white basketball player from the 90s.
Do you think that if you were growing up today, similar circumstances even as far as socioeconomics and everything, but just the way
the world is set up today and the way the sports world is set up. Like, I can't relate to anything you just said, but I'm also not a, you know, I didn't grow up watching sports, and I wasn't like, oh, I can really relate to, I don't know, like white musicians or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not trying to give you a hard time. I don't have an equivalent of that in my life. And I'm wondering if you feel like if you were growing up in 2021, you would maybe have gravitated towards the same thing. I feel like that's kind of
well,
doubtful.
I would say this. Michael Jordan was still my very favorite basketball mm-hmm. player. Like, I was obsessed with players of all races, I guess, depending on who the player was. I also actually thought Tim Hardaway was amazing, who was also a black player. But there was just, like, this kind of thing in my mind where it was like, if somebody, like, a great example is a guy named Jason Williams, who actually played for the Sacramento Kings, whose nickname was White Chocolate. He was a white dude who passed the ball with an amazing flair. And I was so into him, I think because I thought, well, I could maybe be Jason Williams. You know, like, there was just some kind of – I identified with these white guys who were playing in the NBA, and it made me think, oh, that was a possibility. Turns out I wasn't going to make the NBA, Andrew.
Well, you're not Reader. Dead yet.
I've got time. I'm only 45 years old. I recently lit him up over at Irving Park in Portland. I did, by the way, I don't know if we talked about this on the show, but my second time out there, I actually played pretty well.
I think you talked about your first time out there, maybe.
Right, which was a disaster.
Right.
It was literally a major disaster. But my second time out there, which was just like the next day or something, I actually hit a couple shots, and I got the most coveted thing you can get as a pickup basketball player, which is I got the ball, and the other team, somebody yelled, shooter, so as to encourage the person guarding me to get out closer to me because I was seen as an offensive threat.
A threat.
Yes.
I have been seen as a threat before, too, but only in the library when I was sitting in a section I wasn't supposed to be sitting in, apparently.
And I think rightfully so.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
So I understand that you are you've now become a White Claw man, like your father.
Oh,
and
that's
father
right. We're supposed
him.
To talk about that today, huh? Yeah, no, I
you don't need to talk more about race and basketball?
Well, it is White Claw.
White Claw summer.
Yeah, I just think it's kind – I mean, I don't know how much there is to say here. I just think it's kind of interesting that I went from a guy who has never – I might have had one White Claw at one point when it was new and everybody was talking about it. But I basically went from having zero interest in them to, I think, like having at least one White Claw 4 days in a row over the weekend starting on Thursday. And, yeah, that's what my alcohol consumption is like, people. I just don't think of myself as a White Claw kind of person. I don't even know exactly what that means. But, you know, I'm a shot and a beer kind of guy. That's my lifestyle. But I was going to the store. Here's the deal, Luke. I keep a during the summer months, I keep a well-iced cooler on our back porch, and that's where we keep our beer and things. Got Genevieve some light Coronas, even some of the ultra-light Coronas or whatever they're called. I keep some Miller Lights in there, and I love puttering, Luke. I love getting a bag of ice every couple of days, mm-hmm. draining the water out, re-icing it. I mean, people say I don't have a hobby. People say I don't have a zest for life. Mm-hmm. Zest? No, that's not the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
I do, and it just involves, you know, melting ice, getting new ice, melting ice, getting new ice. Just, it's a full life. And the other day, I was playing in the cooler, I guess. Let's just call it what it is. I was, you know, icing it down or whatever. And then I was like, okay,
you
well,
icing yourself?
I should go get some more beer. But I was like, but we have plenty of beer. I was like, we have Miller Lite and we have Coronas in here. Like, what more could a fellow want? But like,
Walsh Xander wept because there was no more beer to put in the ice box.
And I cannot explain it other than to say it was a flight of fancy, Luke. Like, I just had it in my head that I wanted to go to the store to buy more beer. And I was like, but I already have that kind of thing. Yeah, but buy a fun beer. During the winter, I like. There's a couple of IPAs that I like, so I drink those. But I'm not really drinking those in the summertime. Plus, they're very, very heavy. And I was thinking, so I'm not going to go to the store to buy an IPA. I already have our other two beers. But I was just like, I just feel like buying something. I never have had the urge just to like window shop for some sort of like different beer. But I don't know. I just wanted the experience of purchasing something. So I walk over to Whole Foods. I'm looking at different beers. I'm just like, I don't know. I don't really want anything. I like Miller Lite. And then I saw the White Claw, and I thought, huh, it's a hot, sunny day. Should we put some of these in the cooler? I can have one if I don't like it or if it's not my thing. I'm sure Genevieve or guests over the course of the next few weeks will drink them up. Didn't have a problem with that, actually. I took care of those things pretty quickly in the next couple of days. I like me some White Claw, man. Like, it is a nice... It's a nice little treat. I like the grapefruit kind are my favorites. I've only tried that in cherry. Cherry's a little sweet for me, but I don't think of myself as the. I don't feel like I fit the White Claw profile. But here we are. Don't judge a book by its cover.
And what is it that you enjoy about the experience?
It was fresh. It was very fresh and light. And it just sort of hit the spot. I mean, I'm sure it's got to be directly related to the fact that it's been very hot and sunny outside, too.
Heat dome.
I know. I was reading about that heat dome yesterday.
Now, my problem with – and I had a moment with White Claw, like in the early days. What I like about it is it's a – I mean, it's effectively a vodka soda, which is what all these hard seltzers are. They are more or less a vodka soda, but they are allowed to sell them at gas stations and the like. And I think what I liked about White Claw was if I was to go to a place that only had beer, which I'm not a huge beer consumer, although, boy, I had a beer at the baseball game the other night with you, and, oh, delicioso.
What like, was it? Just like a lighter kind of like a Rainier? Or
no, something? Actually, I think it was an IPA.
Mm, yeah.
Because it was either Coors Light or IPA. Was it like a weird concession stand that was like sort of the options?
And yeah.
I was tempted to go Coors Light, but I was like, eh, that's just water that you dropped a penny in. I'm going to go ahead and get this IPA. And if you have like three beers a year, which is about the amount of beer that I have. Mm-hmm. Now, I have a lot of other alcohol. It's not like I'm teetotaling. But if you have about three of them a year, boy, they sure hit the spot when you have one of your three beers a year.
Yeah.
But so what I liked about White Claw was you could get it at the same place you could get beer because it's categorized different than hard alcohol because it doesn't have any actual liquor in it, right? It's one of those things that's got a malt liquor. So it's got something that's, I guess, closer to beer that's then reduced down to its most just pure basic ethanol component. And so it tastes like and I guess acts like a vodka soda, but it's not actually vodka.
Which I'm surprised that I didn't know you went through your phase. Sorry about the pause there. I was just clearing my throat, and you stopped at an inopportune moment for me. Luke, please try to read the room. I didn't think that you'd be able to associate with this story. So you know, you understand the appeal.
Like, I was on the White Claw train a long time ago. It was kind of a go-to for me.
Yeah.
Because back in the day when I was much more careful about my carbohydrate, carbohydrant
carbohydrates
consumption.
I don't even think you've seen that movie, have you? I love it.
No,
that drops
that
so
Kristen
much.
Wiig?
It's Kristen Wiig. I can't think of the name of the movie. It's the one where
it's where she is a she basically gets a makes a yes. TV show because she's rich
exactly.
And gives her own money to make the TV
show. I don't know if you've seen it. If you haven't, I think it's worth seeing. Anyway, yeah, that's what
I
that's
haven't.
From. Yeah.
But when I was more careful about carbohydrates or whatever, I liked White Claw because, again, because I was just a vodka soda man at the time, and this was basically a vodka soda. But since then, I have both embraced the carbohydrate lifestyle and also gotten mildly weirded out by the – not weirded out, but it's like all of those things, whether it's Truly, White Claw, you name it. They're all based on something that is a malt liquor. And I don't know why that matters to me. Like, it shouldn't. It, you know, like, it's not like vodka. I mean, vodka is made from whatever it's made from. So I don't know why that is a big deal to me that all of those in a can kind of vodka sodas are not really vodka. But for some reason, that started to kind of affect my opinion of them. And interestingly enough, there is now, I forget who makes it, but there is the first Because, by the way, there's a Topo Chico hard seltzer now.
Is there really? There's a Rainier hard seltzer. I saw it in the store yesterday.
It's like, you know, I mean, there's money to be made there, but there's actually a hard seltzer now, and their sort of claim to fame is that they use actual vodka.
Oh, really? I wonder if there will be rules that are different about, like, where it can be sold. You know,
I would assume so.
I'm really, yeah, so I said to Genevieve one time, I'm like, boy, you really know that the beer industry must really be suffering if I'm now drinking White Claw. You know, I just did not see my, I'm just such a shot in the beer guy. Like, I just, and now I'm just like.
Pum. Somebody hit like a button and then like an alarm went off throughout the beer industry. We lost Walsh.
This is like, this is bad. This is, things are not trending the right way. But anyway, and Genevieve's like, oh yeah, you think so? Maybe that's why every single beer company has its own brand of hard seltzer now. So one thing that we're going to do, we're recording after these messages today, and I haven't done the research on this yet, but unless there's absolutely nothing here, I think what we're going to do, based on my new love of White Claw, is to actually look at the advertising kind of approaches of these different brands, because I'm interested in seeing if like the Bud Light branded hard seltzer is going to be trying to appeal to your more stereotypical Bud Light kind of person. In this case, maybe like your typical Bud Light kind of guy when you think about their advertising campaigns. Is that the one that debuted its kind of brand during the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and it's two women who own the company? I don't know if that's Truly or another one, but I would assume that their advertising approach and their target market is probably a lot different than the Rainier hard seltzer.
I feel like the Bud Light hard seltzer, their big rollout was that campaign that also I think aired during the Super Bowl, where like a town, it was like a guy was the mayor of like a weird quirky town, and he was announcing that the town was, I don't know if they were naming the town Bud Light Hard Seltzer or whatever, but it was like very Parks and Rec.
It was, and it also reminded me a little bit of Kyle MacLachlan plays the mayor in Portlandia, right? It kind of reminded me of that a little bit. Isn't it in his chambers?
Yes, and I think he's got an assistant with him, and yeah, it was very Kyle MacLachlan in Portlandia kind of thing.
Yeah,
but so I know that one happened, but I don't know. I don't remember the Truly stuff, but yeah, it is. I mean, it's like the growth sort of aspect, I guess, of the alcohol market. And I wonder if it's just because it's light and refreshing, or because everybody got obsessed with club soda, so this is just the natural next step, or if people are more concerned about their carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. I wonder what accounts for the like massive popularity of hard seltzers.
Yeah, I think – I mean, honestly, I think yes to all of those things. I think it's just it would be interesting if somebody actually, and I'm sure there's all kinds of, you know, like inside the industry kinds of research on this right now. I would love to read, though, like maybe even after a few more years pass we can look at this in the rearview mirror a little bit more. Like, this seems like a really fascinating cultural shift in you know, this particular product line. And I just think it's really interesting, and like how everybody had to adapt pretty quickly to it. And I think you're right. It's all of these factors. I do think it's the carbohydrate thing. I think it's just generational too. Like I just, you know, I was at the grocery store the other day, and there were these three guys, I'm assuming they were college guys. And I've seen this before to a degree, where they're clearly having a party and they're loading up, you know, their cart just full of copious amounts of alcohol. But when I walked in, I walked into the beer aisle. I now call it the White Claw aisle. When I walked into the White Claw aisle, somebody was removing White Claws, and I couldn't quite see his face. I can't remember why. Well, we're all wearing masks. That's one reason. But also, I can't remember if he had longer hair and it was covering it or what. But he was a figure whose face I could not see. But he was moving so much White Claw out of the refrigerator into his cart that for a second I was confused, because I thought, you don't look like you work here, but you are clearly like you're removing this product.
You thought there had been a recall on White Claw, and they had sent out Sal from the back of the store to load up a cart and get the White Claw out of there. But no, he was just Chad, and he was having a party.
Oh, he was such a Chad. And yes, and I mean, and I'm not even, I'm not.
Peace and love to listeners named Chad.
Yes, and I don't have, you know, like, part of me for a second was kind of like, aren't we still in the pandemic? And I'm like, no, I was at a baseball game last night. Things are opening
up. Oh, you had
the
thought about him having a party.
I think that I had a weird, I just had this weird thing that I need to get over. It only flashed for a second. Like, I just think, oh, judgy. But I think, oh, that's because of a year and a half of me silently judging people and not so silently judging people. I was honestly, I'm not joking, I was honestly confused why, because he was just doing it at such a pace. He was just like removing all the white claw. So I actually snuck in and I think I grabbed one before they all disappeared. And then turns out that was just before he got to the beer. And then I saw his two other friends and they were just like walking up and down the aisle. Again, I've seen this exact scene before, college kids prepping for a party, but I've never seen it to this extent. They had two grocery carts just like indiscriminately just loading it with alcohol. So it sounds like that was probably a fun party for them on Saturday.
Hot Chad Summer is here.
It is indeed.
And many people have more, a little bit more discretionary income.
Yep.
And a powerful lust for partying. And so, I think we're going to see more and more of that. There was one more thing I wanted to say about that. But
can I ask you a question while you think
I got
of
distracted
that?
By the ambulance driving by. I know that people are just having medical emergencies, but I resent every ambulance that has to drive by my apartment.
No, that's fair. That's what I always say. Defund the ambulances. You know, I got the whole thing going on.
ACAB. Ambulances can all blow.
Oh, wait.
Them, so I don't know. I should have picked a different B word.
How about ADAB, all doctors are bastards. All right. My question for you is this while you try to regain your footing. I don't know that we've ever seen two potential show titles come out of one sentence, but would you be happy with either Hot Chad Summer or A Powerful Lust for Partying as today's show title?
That's a thing that I say because of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And in fact,
I didn't know that
that's
you were
a thing that Kamara Kev and I throw around a lot. There is I can't remember if it's Johnny Depp's character or if it's Benicio del Toro's character, but somebody says they have a powerful lust for red salmon. So if ever Kamara Kev and I are interested in anything, like in fact he told me I have a powerful lust for karaoke, which, of course, we weren't actually able to achieve the other night, but he had a powerful lust for it.
Yeah, okay. Now that you've put it in that context, I can think of it. Did you think of what you wanted to say, or should we just go to break?
No, but I'm sure that is an indicator of how important it was, which is to say, not that important. Okay. So we'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back with the top stories. Maybe during the quick break I'll remember what I was trying to remember. Anyway, stay with us. It's TBTL.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Our top story, there is a petition, which I don't think Andrew is going to actually, have any kind of legal standing. I don't think it's legally binding. But there is a petition to have Jeff Bezos stay in space when he goes up to space for a few minutes. And it's got like 80,000 signatures. And I guess I thought it was interesting because I was also talking to somebody in Seattle this weekend who has friends who work at a restaurant that Jeff Bezos apparently went to recently in Seattle. And I had actually seen this video on TikTok and did not realize it was from an event in Seattle. But Jeff Bezos went to eat at this restaurant and then was leaving and then was like heckled by these couple of people. And the heckling was so mean, and I would actually say kind of ableist, because the guy said something to the effect of, "How do you feel when people die in your warehouses or your production plants?" That's not the ableist part. Then the woman said something about him having a lazy eye and said, "Money can't fix that." And it just struck me as Jeff Bezos didn't respond. He was just like walking to some giant black SUV with his security, but it struck me as just so pointed and just kind of like I get that Amazon is, their labor practices are certainly very problematic, and there are a lot of things about Amazon that are not making the world a better place, but the fact that, like, I was talking to Addie this weekend and she said that in her friend group if anyone were to admit that they order stuff from Amazon, they would be ostracized, essentially. And I just, like, maybe it's a generational thing, but, like, I'm not trying to defend Jeff Bezos, but I am just it's interesting to me that he is considered to be basically Hitler now. It just seems like a pretty extreme response.
Yeah, you know, it is scary, though. I you know, there was just another story in the Seattle Times yesterday, and I bet you it's not a coincidence that they released this investigative piece during what is now being branded as Prime Week. I believe it used to be Prime Day, which, I mean, that, again, just kind of shows the power of Amazon. And, like, I feel
By the way, super overrated.
What is?
Prime Day. Like, it's like the TJ Maxx of Amazon. It's like you can't go on there and necessarily get anything specific that you want. It's just random shit that they're not moving that they, like, offer at a lower – isn't that – like, do you – I don't know, maybe like was last year, I was like, oh, Prime Day, I'm going to score some deals. And then I went on there and I was like, oh, I can get some batteries for cheaper. Like, I was very underwhelmed by what this Prime Day thing is actually about.
Well, I have not played in that space, but if you look at, like, just the power of what they have, like, I, for the past couple of weeks, have been hearing these commercials that didn't make sense to me at first until I realized, oh, I am listening to an appliance store specifically, without saying Prime Day, try to say, hey, if you're looking to buy a TV this week and you're looking for the Prime discounts, don't go online. Like, they are – and I mean, this is just a small –
Was that video only?
It really was, yeah. It was video only.
Yeah. Those are
you'll be
the
sorry.
Worst ads yeah. and have been the worst ads for over 30 years.
They say video doesn't teach for a day, but for a lifetime. anyway, that's just a small cultural thing. That's not my broader point. Do I even have a broader point? I think my broader point is I understand the scariness that is Amazon. I feel like this is a ball that is rolling downhill and people are starting and I applaud the if you say it's a younger generation thing, I applaud the younger generation for trying to stand pat against it because it is scary. I feel like this snowball is rolling downhill and he/Amazon are accumulating more and more power. And, you know, obviously there's the tax issues and you talk about the labor practices in the warehouses. But also this piece in the Seattle Times looks at the review processes, you know, the problematic review process that. Processes for their, headquarter workers and how they keep on saying
that the 6% thing.
Yes, exactly. They're like basically trying to get rid of 6% of your workforce because, you know, turnover is good and having these, you know, I know people who have suffered, you know, who have been excited to get jobs there and then have suffered like emotionally from in, you know, I know there are a lot of hard jobs out there, but it sounds like a place that is almost built to just, I don't know, man, it sounds like a very upsetting place to work. I mean, it just sounds like it is literally built so that you can, you and I were talking the other day about Tyrion, right? In Game of Thrones, when he was, you know, imprisoned somewhere at the top of a tower that bars, but the floor was just like
uneven,
tilted a little bit towards the opening of the maw that would send him to his death. And he had to just try to relax up there and sleep up there and eat up there. But, you know, he was always being tilted towards his death. Like, I sort of feel like that's how Amazon sounds to me. I'm not made of very tough stuff, but it just sounds like, I mean, the culture from top to bottom just sounds terrible. And that's not even getting into the huge impact that this company is having on the world and my beloved city of Seattle as well, without being, I feel like, taxed properly. Like, it's funny that I feel so strongly. I mean, I can't think of a company that is more scary to me than Amazon right now. And I'm worried
but
that
do you
they're
order,
just getting
I'm
started.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but do you ever order anything from Amazon?
A little bit. And the funny thing is I feel like I got into more of a habit of ordering from them. I don't know, maybe sometimes. Well, it was probably maybe pandemic related, but I was very slow to order thing to start like making it a regular thing where I order things online, and it didn't have to do with my morals. It just had to do with me being kind of an old and feeling like, I know they say that's easy to return things, but it sounds like such a pain. If I order this thing and it doesn't work out right, then I'm stuck with it, and I got to jump through hoops. And I know they've ironed a lot of that stuff out, but that's just like kind of the old manness that I dragged along into this economy. But now I'm more comfortable ordering things online. But no joke, I'm not just saying this because they're an advertiser, but I feel much better ordering things from places like Grove or directly from stores. I'm not saying I don't ever order things from Amazon, but I'm really, it's rare for me anyway, but I'm also trying to actively not. Or if I see something on Amazon that I want, I look to see if there's a way I can buy it more directly.
I think I'm just a bad person because I don't know. I just generally, like, I understand intellectually that Amazon is, you know, is in a lot of ways making the world a worse place. But I'm just, I think, so obsessed with my own experience, or center myself in every experience, that I'm like, oh, but I can get baby wipes in 2 hours? Why wouldn't, you know, delivered to my door or whatever? Like, I just, the convenience factor. And I actually don't order a ton of stuff off of Amazon, but I'm just not as, like, I don't know. I'm not as sort of troubled by it as probably I should be, I guess.
Yeah, and again, like, I feel kind of inarticulate about this, and of course there are much more articulate people who have had much more intelligent conversations about the scariness that is Amazon. I know that Chris has done a couple of episodes of his podcast about it, right, at this point?
But, yes, and it's very, very illuminating. And most of my... to the degree that I have bad feelings when I order something on Amazon, it's all off of listening to those episodes of Why Is This Happening?
Yeah, and I'm trying to. The reason I'm fumbling around now is I want to be honest with you and tell you actually what I've ordered via Amazon. Oh, ironically, I did buy a book off of Amazon that just arrived yesterday. Remember, I'm reading that, or I was reading that Theodore Roosevelt book, and then I kind of stalled out on it. I was like, what if I just had a paperback copy of it? And so I actually walked into Third Place Books. I walked into several bookstores. I couldn't find a used copy of it. So I bought one, like a used copy of The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt, for like $1 through some bookstore. Or I bought it from a bookstore,
I believe,
in Denver.
I'm working on a book called The Rise of Theodore Murray.
Yeah, he's right here right now being very cute. I thought maybe if I had the paperback copy of the book, I would get back into it because that's how things work. I ordered a mouse at the beginning of June. And my mouse pad. So yeah, those are the things I've ordered recently. A mouse pad on June 2nd and a book. I do think it's interesting that Amazon started as a... I mean, it's just fun to remember that Amazon started as a bookseller.
I mean, oh man, this is not where I want to take the conversation because I'm going to look very bad, but it's like... I guess I just need to do more research on it, I think, because... I was going to say, like, I know that the fulfillment centers sound like they're really terrible places, and I guess the issue is they're the only jobs that can be had in places. And so I was going to say, well, people could also not work at the fulfillment centers, but they're often the only option. And I guess really the issue is Jeff Bezos could give everyone bathroom breaks and still be the richest person on planet Earth. You know what I mean? I think that's probably what people are mad about, rightfully so. Like, it's... all of the things that are not great about Amazon, particularly as it relates to its workers and the drivers and all of that, those are just things that are about increasing profits. And it's not like they're not making enough money. It's not like Jeff Bezos isn't getting rich enough. They could run a business more like Dick's Drive-In in Seattle that famously, like, sort of not overpays its employees, but pays its employees a very, very respectable wage, gives them time off to take college classes. Like, they were sort of like, we're going to be the company that does right by our employees, and then we will have a huge amount of loyalty. And Costco is another example of a place that's supposedly very good to work at because they really take care of their people. Amazon could be that company, I think, if they wanted to. It's not like they're hanging by a thread in the sort of, you know, profit department, but they choose not to, and I think that's what makes it a bad scene.
And I mean, well, a couple of things. You know, you mentioned, you know, can you get a job somewhere else? Well, I know that you kind of walked that back a little bit because that's very complicated, but also it's part of the problem that as the snowball rolls downhill, they right. eliminate more and more of the jobs and they suck up the jobs. And then I'm sure you read that piece. I think it was it this Sunday's New York Times, the New York Times piece that kind of took a look at what the labor practices were during the pandemic, like the bad labor practices. That's not breaking news, but somebody just did an interesting story, a feature in the Times that was saying, well, Amazon said they were going to try to work on this. What was it like for employees during the pandemic? And like, it sounds like just from a user experience, or what's the word I'm looking for, HR standpoint, like they've automated all that stuff. Think about your worst interaction ever with, let's just say, Xfinity, trying to get somebody on the line to help you with your bill or get your internet working again. And like you just keep going through phone trees and every single one is a dead end, right? Like to think about your most infuriating moments in a phone call voicemail tree like that. It sounds like that's basically how they're handling their employees. People who had to take leaves of absence for illness are getting automated calls saying that they're going to be fired, and then they try to call back to say, no, I don't, I still want to work here. What? Hello? And like they're just like trying to argue with robots that are just saying, your wife's new name is you're fired, Targus. Like it just sounds just, and that's the part where you're not on the warehouse floor.
Right. Those are the people that have the more probably white collar version.
No, this is those workers, but I'm just saying that's not even part of your job. That's just you. That's just you being messed with during your off hours. Like they're Amazon just has this weird thing where they're just trying to churn people out of the system, and they're using automated systems to do it. So they're just like taking out all of the humanity. Like I do think it's really concerning.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like I know that in my heart. But again, I like probably many Americans when I'm, you know, in a rush. And I'm like, if my convenience is so primary in my, which is bad, by the way, I'm telling everyone, don't email me. I'm telling everyone I recognize that this is bad, but sometimes the convenience factor does sort of cause me to, you know, override what I know to be true, which is that Amazon is making the world a way worse place.
And Jeff I wasn't Bezos, saying that to make you feel bad, by the way. You couldn't
make me feel bad if you tried. currently eyeing a Nugget ice machine on Prime Day that I could buy. It's $100 cheaper than normal.
Oh, actually, can you tell me about that? Is that one of those standalone ice makers? Is it really cute?
Yes.
Is it super cute looking?
It's not. It's actually aesthetically not that cute, but it looks very, very great for this hot summer as the heat dome lowers around all of us. Let's see.
There's an igloo one that I really want. It looks a little retro.
This is the GE Profile Opal Countertop Nugget Ice Maker, which I must have looked at some point, and I'm sure that's why of the various random Prime deals. Like I was going to just like list to you the things that are, although we're talking about Amazon being bad, I was going to list the things that are, I guess, on sale, quote unquote, on sale for Prime Day. And I must have looked at that at some point because it's one of the things that they presented to me. But I do actually really want to get one of these at some point because I love pebble ice.
Yeah.
It is just – I mean, I feel like I drank – you know I already drank, Andrew, one of these giant 60-ounce thermoflasks today. But it's
today?
Because I ate – yeah, this morning because it was probably because I ate almost an entire pizza last night by myself.
And have you gone on your jog yet?
Yes.
So, okay, so that's part of it too, I assume.
Yeah, and I had to because, oh my God, I went on my jog in the afternoon yesterday. That was a bad idea when it was 95 degrees. Anyway, I know intellectually that Amazon is a bad thing, but I tend to, when I'm in a moment, I think, prioritize my own convenience over what I know to be true, which I need to stop doing.
Yeah, me too.
Jeff Bezos is probably not going to be confined to space, although that would be funny if this, petition went through and then he went up there and they're like, sorry, you have to live here. Now you have to go in like
Space Jam?
With the thing they go in Superman 2.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, and who is that the first act of Space Force to arrest Jeff Bezos in space?
Like, I assume the cuffs would be somehow like, made out of like lasers or something, you know
right?
I mean?
Or electromagnetic in some way.
Yes, yeah. Definitely not your standard handcuffs. Uh-huh. It'd be some kind of a fancy space handcuff, and then they put him in that LP, that album that Zod and his hench people were in.
Yeah, spinning around. But I like the way the Space Force also has a billy club. By the way, swinging the billy club like the old style police officer as he's being arrested.
A real throwback.
Yeah. Sorry, I keep interrupting. Go ahead.
I don't think that Jeff Bezos is actually going to be confined to space, but he's also not going to be in space for very long. I talked about this last week, how I felt like for all his money, this is a pretty underwhelming mission to space. And Drew McGarry over at defector.com also noted this, noted the fact that it's not even 11 minutes. I'll just read from this Drew piece. What I did not consider was that Bezos's little Major Tom voyage would be a goddamn fraud. Business Insider's Morgan McFall Johnson gave an outline of Bezos's itinerary, if it can be even called that, last week. And then this is from a Business Insider piece. Bezos will float around the cabin of his company's New Shepard spaceship for just 3 minutes before he has to strap into his seat again and fall back to the ground. This is Drew McGarry again. But wait, there's less.
I love
3 minutes is actually overestimating it. Now back to the Business Insider piece. Briefly, for just a minute or two, the New Shepard spaceship should clear the Kármán line, which is an imaginary boundary 62 miles above sea level, which is where space technically begins. Mm. And this is more from Drew. Not even 3 minutes. Bezos isn't even going to orbit it because his busted toilet of a spaceship isn't powerful enough to do that. He's not going anywhere near the moon. He may not even have to wear a goddamn spacesuit. A majestic overhead view of this crazy little marble we call home, a daring spacewalk to fix the cables on the detachable HAB unit, the breathtaking realization that you exist in a cosmos more expansive than the limits of death itself. Bezos isn't getting any of that. You call yourself an astronaut, you fucking loser.
Drew McGarry.
He's great.
Oh, man.
I mean, when he turns his ire towards things that deserve his ire, it's a real white hot laser.
It really is.
That you know, must be used carefully because it burns. But when he turns it at somebody who probably deserves it. What do you think about those people heckling Jeff Bezos on the street, though? Is that fair game in your mind?
You know, it's hard for me to say. I didn't see that video, so I don't know what it was like. I'm not going to take it there. I will say this. I sometimes imagine what it would be like if I were introduced to somebody who I feel, well, number one, that I have no respect for, but they have a lot of power, right? I'll say this. I'm not, you know, I know that she's a Democrat and everything, but like, I am not at all a big fan of our current mayor here in Seattle, Jenny Durkin. And I disagree on a lot of things she said, her approaches to a lot of things, and her policies. And sometimes I think, like, if I were introduced to her, I wouldn't do something like, you know, rude, but would I take that moment to in any way sort of like try to show that I don't agree with her, I don't like what she's been doing to the city via her office? And I don't have an answer to that. I am definitely not somebody who, if I was passing somebody like Bezos or Durkin on the street, that I would like say something. It's weird because it's super embarrassing. I want to always let everybody know that I know it's embarrassing, but like my whole like what we call the polite car syndrome, me seeing somebody, you know, kind of breaking the rules of society around us by taking up two parking spots or parking their SUV in a bike lane, and my inability not to like sort of like say something passive aggressively while I'm passing and somehow both be confrontational and avoid confrontation at the same time and just confusing everybody, including myself and eventually you and the TVTL listeners. Like, I know that lives inside of me. I don't think I would have the urge to do that with somebody like Bezos or Durkin, or, you know, I used to fantasize about this all the time when I was very, very young. Now I feel like when W. Bush was in office, right? And so I don't know. I'm not a big heckler, I don't think. But it also, if anything those people said landed at all, it kind of would make me happy if Jeff Bezos.
But the
had
lazy eye thing.
Oh yeah, no, I would no. That's
it's
one
been
thing
taken
that,
down from TikTok for bullying. By the way,
that is one thing, and I feel like I've even been I just have a personal rule. Like, I don't go after anybody's looks at all. Like, I think if you go back, like, you've never said, you know, even with Trump, who's like the most deplorable, you know, person in the country, like, I've never talked about his color of his skin or his hair or anything like that. Like, only because I'm like, there are just so many other things to talk about with these folks. Like, all that does, that doesn't do any good. And it also can, you know, make that person feel like they're just being aggrieved. Like, and also, like, and I don't like it with if somebody comes after somebody who I do respect from a political or intellectual perspective and somebody is saying, I remember, Luke, being on working at Cairo Radio, and of course it's a mix of conservatives there and liberals like you and me when we were working there, whatever. And I remember coming into the studio after Dory Monson was getting off the air, and of course he's a conservative gas bag, and like there was a woman on MSNBC who actually I remember even thinking like, oh, I thought she was kind of cute and nerdy looking, but like I remember like Dory and maybe it was his producer at the time, I don't know who it was, just like looking up and being like, I can't believe they put her on TV, she'd never be on Fox News. And I was just like, that kind of casual sexism, I think I was relatively new at Cairo at the time, coming from public radio and just being like, wow, we just say these things. Like I think about that example a lot and just how terrible that is to hear people just like judge people in that way. So even the people, whether it's Ted Cruz or Trump or Bezos or whoever, I don't go in for that type of thing.
So when I say that Ted Cruz looks like a G.I. Joe man that somebody put in the microwave for a minute, I shouldn't say that.
What else shouldn't you say?
The Trump one is really hard for me because – this is just like the most obvious thing is to leave it alone because do not sink to his level. But it's like his whole thing, because he's an absolute cretin, is to go after other people's appearance all the time. And so it just feels like if there's anybody that it's fair game with, it's him. But of course, then it just, you've just sunk to his level, which is a level none of us want to be at.
Yeah. In fact, I know. I mean, it's literally, I think we got maybe one email in the history, you know, since Trump's been in office, or one, maybe it was a voicemail of somebody who is probably more conservative than us and just saying, like, I don't get it. Like, how come you guys can just make fun of Trump's appearance all the time? Like, that's just like, and you know, it was probably somebody who maybe didn't love Trump, but also maybe didn't find him as repugnant as us. And I remember, I think it was a voicemail, and I just remember thinking, I don't. Like, I just don't. And that's exactly why. Because then if you ever want to get into an intellectual argument with somebody, like, you've lost a lot of ground just by playing that nasty game, too. Like, all the, like, remember there's a diaper, supposedly a, I don't even know. Also, what Trump is doing with his look is also just befuddling. So I understand why it's worth, like, at least just asking some questions about maybe in private. Like, there's the most recent thing that I can remember is he was at some function and he was wearing big pants that looked like they were on backwards, maybe, and weirdly
puffy.
Yeah,
this thing, I think he was in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And it looked like he had his pants on backwards, which everybody was freaking out about, which I was like, the guy is, you know, an absolutely evil human, in my opinion. I don't think he literally puts his pants on backwards. Like, I think even he has that moment where you zip up your pants, and were he to try to do that, and then there was no zipper, even he would note, this is, you know, I think it was just a weird, you know, glitch of the photo. And then also, this was something that I didn't go after that on Twitter or say anything about it, but then people were joking about him wearing a diaper, and I can't remember who it was, but somebody was saying, you know, there are many people who, you know, adults who wear diapers for a variety of reasons, and like making that a way to dehumanize someone is just a really not great look, because there are many of us who are, that's just part of, you know, their daily life, and it makes them feel crummy. And I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, the you know, trying to get back at Trump by saying he wears a diaper is a pretty crude thing to do, and it's pretty mean to people that are wearing diapers, because that's just what's going on with their body.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, because, again, I'm not trying to defend Trump, but I guarantee you that there is some lawmaker whose policies I agree with, given, you know, the age of, just given the age and the situation, people's personal situations. I guarantee you there's a lawmaker in D.C. right now who I agree with and would defend wholeheartedly, who might be incontinent in some way and has to wear an undergarment that I don't have to wear. Like, I just, like, that's not what we're arguing about here, you know? I just feel like you lose a lot of ground when you focus on that stuff.
Yes. Good point, Andrew. We get it. You're better than I am.
Both of you us. Know what, Luke? Why don't you just buy a How I Can Be a Better Person book on Amazon?
You know who's a better person than both of us, I think, is maybe Carl Nassib. He is a defensive lineman for the Las Vegas Raiders. That will never sound normal to me to say.
Yeah, the Vegas Raiders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm great with, you know, people of the same gender marrying each other. I'm great with trans rights. I'm great with every part of the LGBTQ plus world that we now live in and acceptance. You know what? I won't accept the Las Vegas Raiders. I refuse. It's Adam and Steve, not Las Vegas Raiders. But anyway, this guy is a defensive lineman for the Raiders. And this feels like a big deal to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting kind of medium play on several European radio stations. I feel like it should kind of be a bigger story because this is huge. This is a guy who is going to, you know, he's probably already at OTAs or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he is playing professional football with a bunch of other folks, and he is, you know, has made, I think, a very brave decision to come out. You know, it's one thing to do it after you've left the league.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would put him on the same level as the guy who came out of, I forget the college he played at, who came out in college, but then he didn't really make the NFL. Although that's not on him. I mean, that guy wanted to be in the NFL. So he came out before, I think, before he even, like, you know, went to the combine and stuff. So I would say both of these people are very brave for, you know, being in the football, the pro football environment, and being out gay men. Anyway, let me just play you. I also just think his statement was kind of great and chill. So here we go. This is Carl Nassib off of Instagram. Uh-oh, I've got to unmute this. Hold on. Also, you know what I don't like about Instagram videos is they just auto-start. And so you've got to, like, you got to keep refreshing the browser to get it to start at the right place. And then you got
to. I was here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. I'm a pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that, like, one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm going to do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate. And I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project. They're an incredible organization. They're the number one suicide prevention service for LGBTQ youth in America. And they're truly doing incredible things. And I'm very excited to be a part of it, to help in any way that I can. And I'm really pumped to see what the future holds. That's all I have for you guys. I hope you have a great day. Work hard. What's up?
Anyway, so that's the announcement, which I just also just kind of love. I don't know his tone. Not that anyone needs me to weigh in on if his tone was right or not. But I don't know. It just seems like a cool dude, and, like, I'm incredibly impressed with his bravery to do that.
Yeah, it's like, I just feel like, especially as straight people, we can kind of forget, especially because, what was it, 2012, Luke, when gay marriage was upheld by the court?
Well, let's see. When was Schubert dipped?
Sorry, I don't know why I decided to ask you the date. But either way, it's been a while, right? And, like, I think it's easy for us to think, oh, yeah, like, it's just easy to be gay and out now. And it's like, it's not. There are so many corners of the culture. I was listening to our friend Bean's show the other day, Cup of Tea and a Chat with Allie and Bean. And a couple of women called in to the show to say, hey, we're getting married today, but we can't tell our parents, so we wanted to tell you. And, like, that really stuck with me. I've just been thinking about that, you know? And it's not like, oh, it's this uber-masculine sports world where it's not accepted. Like, there are just people who just can't live their goddamn lives. I mean, there are people who just can't tell their parents what's going on with their lives right now. I know people whose parents don't know that they're gay, and, like, and everybody else does, but they have to keep this a secret. Like, there's so much pain there, and it's, like, 2021, and it's just, like, we're still a far away from there, I think, in a lot of, like, families and cultures in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's easy, if you're a straight person like I am, to assume that it's just, like, it's all chill now, and, like, you know, if somebody realizes that they're gay, it's, like, it's not a big deal at all. It's just another way to be, because, of course, that's sort of how we see it. But, I mean, talk to any gay person, and they will tell you a story about coming out, and it's not a chill story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe there's the very rare occasion where it's like a person was not sweating it, but the fact that it is as stressful and that people don't feel comfortable coming out and that people try to – people marry someone of the opposite gender, that people do all these things, that indicates that it's still a huge deal in our society. As accepting as it would seem that it is kind of broadly, I'm looking at the comments on Carl Nassib's Instagram post, and you got the NFL saying, "We're proud of you, Carl," and then a heart emoji. Dwayne Wade checking in with a do you call it prayer hands, or is it two people? Is it people high-fiving, or is it someone doing a prayer?
Oh, I think those are prayer hands. That's how I always saw them.
So Dwayne Wade is standing with him. I wanted to get your opinion of this comment from J.J. Watt, who's of course a massively successful NFL defensive lineman. He says, "Good for you, Carl. Glad you feel comfortable enough to share, and hopefully someday these types of announcements will no longer be considered breaking news." Now, I think that's a good. I think that's a positive statement, and I actually mm-hmm. generally like J.J. Watt. I don't know him, but he seems okay to me. But there's some weird. I don't know why. Does that comment strike you as slightly weird?
No, okay. I don't think
it's
so.
Just probably not.
I think he's echoing exactly what Carl. Is it Nassib? Is that how you?
Yeah,
Carl Nassib. I think he's almost echoing what he just heard in the video, saying like, hopefully we won't have to release these videos. We can just all live our lives, and it won't be a big deal. So, I think he's just echoing that.
I guess it was something about glad you feel comfortable enough. Also, It's like J.J. Watt is just like a big old meathead, a big old meathead guy from like Wisconsin or whatever. And, I guess it's hard for my brain to understand that he actually has a sort of, I would consider the quote unquote right take on this, but I think he does. If he wasn't into this, he just wouldn't comment.
Yes, so
him
exactly.
commenting indicates that he is trying to be supportive.
And this is one of those things where, I was going to say it wasn't long ago, but it actually might be right now where people like it's something like this. People would say this is going to, disrupt the locker room. There's so much gay panic and homophobia, especially, I think, in a lot of sports.
Football, where there's
NFL.
Zero homoerotic overtones
right,
all. This is what's going to happen with the butt slapping.
Right. The game where we're going to pass a football from between our legs as if we're giving birth to it, to the person behind us. So I think the more big names who are going to come out and support, well, maybe this will kind of spread the kind of vibe to other locker rooms. So if there's other people who are, on a team and they want to just be open about their sexuality, they can do so. It just might, the more famous people who respond to this might just give more cover for other people in the NFL. And again, I really do think that, this has got to be the beginning of a change, right? Like, he's the first one officially to kind of make this statement. But
I wonder what it's going to be like for him when he, when he shows up for training camp or whatever. I wonder how the other I've said this on the show before, I think, but and obviously there are exceptions to this. But of the pro athletes that I have had occasion to like interview or be around, football players are the smartest, hands down. I mean, there are obviously some lunkheads and some people that have huge problems and are very problematic that play football, but just average like smarts of players and average just kind of like, I don't know, just being like normal people that would be fun to hang out with, I would put football players at the top of the list. Then I would put basketball players, and at the bottom, a distant third would be baseball
mm-hmm.
players.
You don't like baseball players.
Well, I just got kind of – I was ever disrespected was by Chris Bozzio, a Seattle Mariner.
That's who
and
it was
on a,
right.
It was a particular day where I was getting – I also got yelled at by this reliever. Oh, phooey. I forget his name, which is good because that's my brain healing. Mike something or other who was just like – for no reason. He was just having a bad day and decided to just like scream at me in the locker room for 10 straight minutes. Like – I've had bad
experience.
Did
you feel like you shouldn't have been there?
Yeah, I was waiting to talk to like Alex Rodriguez, and I had an interview set up with him, and he was getting therapy, like massage or something before the game, and I was just like standing there in the empty locker room. Everybody was out like taking BP, and I was just waiting for this thing that had been set up, and this Mariners relief pitcher just decided that he didn't like me being in there, and he just came and just was screaming at me. So maybe that was actually the most mistreated I was. Chris Bosio just said, comfortable? Because I was like accidentally leaning against the back of a couch. Like I was standing, but my hip was in contact with the back of the couch. And he just decided he didn't like that. Mm-hmm. Comfortable?
Yeah.
I was like, wow, really, dude? Really? You know, this is like, this is your biggest priority right now is being a jerk to me? But
and wasn't there also a story, not to get graphic or anatomical, but wasn't there another story where you're trying to interview somebody in the locker room and he's
yeah Jay Buhner.
It was Jay Buhner. I was gonna say it was
absolutely tell him the bone sent you.
He was kind of like he was naked in the locker room, I believe, and just sort of like physically kind of was picking at something and kind of like you feel like he was kind of intimidating you a little bit the way he was
just being weird up. Which was he was legendary for
trucks and Trucktober.
He was, like, known for throwing up in people's batting helmets. That was one of his – because he could throw up on command like a vulture and or like a condor or whatever. So he would throw up in people's batting helmets. That was one of his great spoofs he would do. And he just – I think was just messing with me because he could tell I was, like, nervous and kind of edge on edge. And so, yeah, he was sitting there naked and he was playing with, like, an ingrown hair or something that was 1 inch from his junk. And he was – maintaining unbroken eye contact with this ingrown hair or whatever it was, and not look, he was talking to me but not looking at me. He was looking directly at his schlong.
He was talking to the hair. All right, I'm gonna play this thing. I've played
talk
a
to the hair because the Buhner don't care.
It's the show
trucks and Trucktober.
I'm gonna play this clip. I've played an edited version of this before, but this is Kyle Mooney, I believe, pre-SNL. He goes to...
What's up, people? I'm Carl Nassib. I'm at my house.
Sorry about that. That's not... Kyle Mooney sounds a lot like Carl Nassib.
No, that's him doing Carl Nassib. So this is Kyle Mooney. He goes to the ballpark. He's doing his I'm trying to interview people in an awkward way thing. He talks to a bunch of fans. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I say one thing about this tape? This is... And I love Kyle Mooney. Like, he's in, like, top five comedy heroes of mine. This tape, which I want us to play, this tape makes me deeply uncomfortable.
Yes, because he's... And he's approaching ball players. And whenever you talk about ball players, I think of like – I think the cockiness of baseball players really comes out in this, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this one guy in particular is you know, the guy who's like, I have no idea what you're talking about, dude.
Yeah.
Like in a way, it's like this is what Kyle Mooney's going for. So I kind of don't blame the baseball player because Kyle Mooney is being intentionally like unintelligible. But him just like roaming around, talking to these players, talking to these fans, and being this weird, it gives me makes my backside pucker a little bit.
You know, now I'm worried that I'm going to play the wrong thing here because I thought there was a lot more of him talking to ball players. He's mostly talking to fans at a ballpark, but I think here's the part where he talks to a ball player. Although it doesn't seem like this lasts as long as I remember.
Around here. Make it for the fences.
Wow, this is the worst interview I've ever had. I'm sorry, man.
No problem.
He's just milling about.
Real great group of guys.
I don't think that's the whole thing. I don't know where the rest of it is. He's interviewing fans for the rest of it. So that was that really fizzled out. You know what? I'll use it as an intro tape tomorrow when I find the real one.
Oh, yes.
So don't listen to the first 30 seconds of the show tomorrow, Luke.
Okay, I won't. Man, I'm trying to play some Mooney.
Ready to laugh and drop till your socks come off?
I just love him so much. I just love him so much.
He is great. I also have to say he gets decent play on SNL, which kind of surprises me because he is such a weirdo in a great way. Like usually if your humor is genuinely super quirky, then you don't get many sketches on. But he actually has gotten a lot of sketches on SNL, I'm very happy to say.
I feel like this is a real question because I don't follow that stuff closely. Is it because he's been there for so long now? Like when you told me he was on SNL, I was shocked and I thought, oh, you'll do that, like, you know, you'll do maybe two seasons as a featured person who has like, you get to be in the very last skit of every episode where things get weird. But it sounds like he didn't like... I think he was kind of treated like that for a while, right? But then he just kind of gutted it out. I feel like he's been there for a long time now.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would say that I think that the producers and Lorne Michaels or whatever, obviously, like, they hired him for a reason. And I think they see – they get that he's super funny. Like that Bruce Channeling character.
Oh, yeah.
He's done a lot on SNL, although it's interesting because that's the Excuse Me, America, Do You Mind, the comedian that we play that intro tape as well. What's interesting is the SNL version of Bruce Channeling is much darker.
Oh.
Like it's less like, you know, My Family, which was just kind of a funny riff on like a shitty stand-up comedian. And it's more like he just – he'll start out, you know, telling jokes on Weekend Update as in this Bruce Channeling character, and then he'll just sort of peter out and then just whisper something about, you know, feeling unloved, and it just like gets really real really fast. Like it's way more weird than the, you know, the Bruce Channeling sketch that we play on the show.
He's been on SNL since 2013, so knocking on the door of a decade here.
Yeah. Let me just play. I don't know what this is. This is not Bruce Channeling, but this is just listed as Kyle Mooney, let's see here. Kyle Mooney on Weekend Update. This is not him as Bruce Channeling. Let's just see what he does.
The Academy Awards are tomorrow. Here to break everything down is resident movie buff Kyle Mooney.
Hey. What's up, Mike? Oscar Sunday. Let's do this.
Yeah! Ah, you seem pretty excited.
Of course, man. Everybody all dressed up. It's going down. Big Mike.
No one calls me that.
Ha ha. Mike calling me the boys.
Okay.
But what's the plan on Sunday? Where are we gonna watch the big show?
Oh, I actually don't know yet.
Don't.
I'm still trying to figure out what I'm gonna do. Hey, who do you got for best picture this year?
I'll get to that, but what about you, Colin? Don't you usually do like a big Oscar party like every year or something?
What's that? No, sometimes. I'm actually not sure yet.
Really? Cause I thought I heard some people saying you might be doing a big thing this year. That's not going down no more?
No, I mean, I guess I was thinking about maybe doing something, but I don't know if it's really going to come together.
Okay. Because you, like... Because you, like, you wouldn't just not invite me, right?
What? No, if I was doing one, you would definitely be there. You would be invited, for sure.
Dope. All right, well, let's just do it at my place, because, Michael, you said you for sure don't have any plans yet, right?
Is this why I never get invited to your big Oscar party?
Yes.
Which I know you do every year.
Uh-huh.
I dress up. As a notorious Oscars head.
Uh-huh. I dress up like the Oscar statuette.
Yes, you do.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week I hope that it's from a female. Oh man, it's not from a female.
Any other videos where young boys discover that Sausage Fest can also mean Penis Fest?
I think that one of those a week is enough.
Okay,
so
that's enough.
If anybody missed right. that, we can you can check out yesterday's show. Let's see here. I have some emails. I have some voicemails on the line I need to check. By the way, I should mention this. Our friend Broadcast Barry left us a voicemail, which I'm sorry, I don't have the tape here in front of me right now. But he's opening, I think I've mentioned this on the show, he's opening another shop in Boise. So
oh, nice.
All the menches on the benches places can check out yeah. Broadcast
Holler
Coffee.
At your boys. Is anybody considered naming it that?
I think that's the name. I think that's the name of the coffee shop. It's either
that's
that.
That's the only broadcast that's called Holler at Your Boys.
Exactly. No, yeah, look for Broadcast. I'm sure all the information is online. But yeah, for our friends, we're I feel like, you know, growing a bigger and bigger Boise community, or maybe just looms ever larger in our brain. But yeah, check out the new coffee shop and congratulations to Barry. I also
keep. Can I just mention,
go ahead? Yeah,
keep Barry in business because he mails us free coffee.
Yes, right.
And if he's
exactly.
still in business, we keep getting free coffee.
Right,
which is
exactly.
the important thing.
But I would also buy it. By the way, just Barry.
I would.
I know
it's
Barry,
very yummy.
I know. Yeah. I don't want Barry to feel like he has to send us coffee. Anyway, Christy in Bellevue, Ontario, says I hate coffee, and I won't. Oh, wait. No, I'm going to skip that one. Here's another one from Christy in Bellevue, Ontario. I was listening to episode number 3428. I'm behind.
I remember
yes.
that one.
Yeah, it was a good one. Better than 27, not as good as 29. Don't worry, I didn't miss renewing my donation during the thon just because I'm behind. I'm hearing the music for your weekend song, VBS. Do you remember this, Luke? That was by Lucy
Dacus. Yeah.
I think I said her name wrong.
Lucy Dacus?
Is it Dacus? I said her name wrong the first time, I believe.
Dacus.
Your singer-songwriter's new name is Dacus. Dacus. And the song was called VBS. Which stood for Vacation Bible School. And it was very, very, what's the word when something is like a diary? It was kind of a confessional song about what her experience was like at Vacation Bible School. And Christy says, it reminded me of my own Bible camp from 25 years ago or so. Were submarine races a thing at anyone else's camps? That's a question. I have never heard of a submarine race. Have you?
No, I wonder how that works. Does she explain?
I never attended one, but apparently some of the kids who had coupled up during camp would go make out by the lake, and their code for this was to watch a submarine race with someone. So apparently if you were going to make out you
by,
were,
the lake.
By the lake, you would say, we're going to go watch the submarine races. I wonder if that's... if
that's
else
a terrible explained. Cover story because yeah. the counselors know that there are no submarines in that lake, right? Like, I feel like if you're yep. trying to be... Maybe it's just within the kid group. But I feel like if you're trying to actually have a plausible story, just go, we're going to go watch, you know, the fish jump or something.
Right. And also, like, a submarine race, I feel like if it was – I mean, I know that subs can, you know, they can submerge and they can also, you know – ride above the water, whatever that's called. I just was on a show where I was a submarine expert, and I literally don't even know what it's called when a
When's
submarine
that coming
is not
out,
submerged.
By the way?
I don't know the exact date, but I'll definitely let people know. I was debating our friend Brandy Brown on the show Smash Boom Best. She was defending spaceships. I was defending submarines, and we debated basically what's better, submarines versus spaceships. So obviously I was very articulate, as articulate on that show as I am here. But anyway, I think a submarine race, like if it's really a good submarine race, it's underwater. And then
right,
you couldn't
exactly.
really see it, which is maybe that's what the joke is. Maybe we're really just stomping all over these kids' joke. Anyway, Christy says that's my story.
I'm also just mad that I never got to make out at VBS.
Yeah, I know.
Like there was no – I was also – I think by the time I was making out age – I was also able to tell my mom, I'm not going to freaking VBS anymore. That place sucks.
Yeah. It sounds like they had VDS.
Ayo.
Well, Christy says, that's my story. The only other thing I remember from then was that the toast for breakfast was always pre-toasted and buttered, and the food was out buffet style. We called the toast soggies.
Now, if... they would have had breakfast at VBS. I think I would have been much more interested.
Ah, your food.
The VBSs that I went to did not provide breakfast, and I would have probably shown up just to eat the breakfast.
So you weren't going to overnight camps?
No, no. See, I think a Vacation Bible School, an overnight camp, that's fun to me, even if it was, you know, evangelical Christian based. Like if I could go stay in a cabin or whatever. The thing about Vacation Bible School was it was a thing that churches would have in the summer, but it would just be you'd show up at like 9 in the morning, and then you would leave at like 3 in the afternoon.
Oh, that's no fun.
Very smart by the churches because basically it was indoctrinating the kids, but the parents just needed babysitting. It was just free babysitting for parents that were too cheap to send their kids to like real camp. So if the listener is talking about an overnight camp, that's a whole other thing. And I'd still go to that like right now.
Yeah, that's interesting because I feel like I'm looking up the lyrics now because that is a big difference. Yeah, the way you describe it, that sounds like you're just losing your summer days.
I'm guessing that Lucy Dacus also was at one like I was.
Well, she was saying about being in bunk beds, though. There is a lyric in there about she was hanging out with a boy that she had a crush on. I feel like in a bunk bed. Unless I'm just trying to figure out if this is one of those things where I made it up because that's what I was picturing. Oh, yeah, here it is. Back in the cabin, snorting nutmeg on your bunk bed. You were waiting for. Okay, yeah.
I'm sorry, Lucy Dacus. You're just wrong on this one.
Mm.
You can't call. It's not Vacation Bible School if it's an overnight camp. Oh, the real heads know. We have plenty of kids who grew up evangelical, and they'll testify to this. It's like that's a whole other thing. That's camp. That's fun. Even if they make you do some amount of Jesus stuff, it's still. You're staying – like Vacation Bible School is a very specific, sucky thing, which is being stuck in a church environment in the middle of the day in the summer and then still going home. That is what Vacation Bible School is.
But I do believe – I mean I do believe that she went to an overnight thing and called – I don't – you know what I mean?
I'm just saying that you wouldn't call that Vacation Bible School.
But
this
I think
is the hill
she,
I will die on.
But I think she did. You think that she's just making that
she's
up
wrong.
That she's got this part of her childhood wrong or as a kid they called it the wrong thing?
I think that as a kid they called it the wrong thing, and now she's calling it the wrong thing in the song. Like, I can't think of a good analogy, but it's just like that's just nobody would ever call it Vacation Bible School. Like, Vacation Bible School was like that was a very specific thing that would happen at a church, and it was like Sunday school in the daytime for a period of 1 week. What she's describing, if she's staying on the bunk beds and in cabins, that's not Vacation Bible School. That's like church camp.
And I'm not – yeah, it's the thing is, I guess what I'm just arguing here is because I remember reading the story because I'd never heard of Vacation Bible School. And I think even on the show, I read her little statement about how she came about to write the song and she remembered going to VBS. So all I'm saying is this is – I just wanted to make it clear. This is based on her own personal experiences, which I believe are real, and that maybe she mislabeled that growing up. But I don't think as an adult she was trying to recapture somebody's thing and called it the wrong thing. I think whatever she did as a kid was a camp, but they called it VBS, I believe.
Right, and they were just wrong about that. Okay. I agree with you. Like that she is describing her actual experience in life, and she's not like going back and revising what they called it. But I'm just saying, again, get at me. This is one thing I do want people to email me about. I guess I could be wrong about this, but I just feel like this is a thing that is probably my most deeply lived experience, which is what it's like growing up as a really Christian kid.
Yeah.
And I just know that if we would talk about VBS, it was just never a sleepover camp.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not arguing with you either. I'm not arguing with you. I just wanted to make it clear that, like, I'm guessing that you are probably right, but my guess is that they called it that back in the day. I just wanted to make it clear that she wasn't like just trying to spin up a story and then getting a detail wrong.
I'm sure that Lucy Dacus called it I'm sure they called it VBS and she called it VBS growing up. So I totally can imagine that world, but I'm just saying that would be, in my opinion, whoever started that, whoever was calling that Vacation Bible School was calling it the wrong thing.
By the way, it's even in Merriam-Webster's dictionary, Luke, and it backs you up. A definition of a Vacation Bible School is a weekday program of Christian education for children featuring religious study courses, arts and crafts, and recreation conducted by local Christian churches for one or more weeks during summer vacation. But, I mean, it almost specifically says what you're saying here, a weekday program. A weekday implies, you know, it's daytime. So
you got to go home.
There you go. All right. Well, that is what I got for you from the old mailbag. What should we go out with? Are there any songs about Vacation Bible School?
I actually love that song, by the way.
I know. It is really sweet.
It's so good. So I'm, you know, no shade on Lucy Dacus. How about this? Oh, I bet you that this, when I was looking up Kyle Mooney, I landed on, like, I was just looking it up in iTunes. And so it was bringing up anything with Kyle. And it brought up this song that I love called Yes, featuring Rich the Kid and K-Camp by a rapper named Kyle. But I don't know if it's appropriate or not. Like, I can't remember the song clearly enough to know if I'm just like, I don't know. What should we do? Should we skip it?
You just know you like it. You don't know.
I know that I love this song, but I can't speak to the content of it if it is graphic. I don't think it uses the N-word, but it may have a couple of passing sexual references.
I can't help you out here. I don't know. I feel like every time I think we're good, I end up playing something, and then it's – and usually this is on me, and it's like, oh, I didn't remember how filthy that was.
How about we play it, and if it is inappropriate, just put a Buster Bluth beep over the whole thing.
That sounds good. Okay, or I'll insert myself saying something that is a cleaner version of what they're saying.
Thank
how about
you.
That?
I was hearing WAP on the radio the other day, and I was like, "How are they doing this?"
Well, that's always been on the radio because it's wet and gushy, right? Isn't that what they translated to for the radio?
I guess I was just kind of half listening, but then it occurred to me. I was in a rental car, and when I turned it on, it was like on Cube 93, which is back to being a hip-hop station in Seattle. And then I at some point realized, oh, this is WAP. Wow.
Was it you who was commenting? Or I don't even know what team I'm talking about now, but WAP is somebody's walk-up music.
That wasn't me, but that's incredible.
Interesting choice, right? Okay, yeah. So here's the song. This is All Yes right. by Kyle featuring Rich the Kid and K-Camp.
All right. Oh, I love it because it uses, I think, a drums. It's a sample from the Drums, that band I also love. Anyway, this is going to do it for today's show. We'll be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Thank you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, have a great Tuesday. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
Beep. Just kidding. Good luck to all.
Yes, I got plenty tattoos on my flesh. Drip on me, I tactical my vest. Honey's everywhere, I made a mess. Yes, I keep racks on me, no, I ain't stressed. 100 full, so don't do no less. Pull up on the jet, now she impressed.
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Power out.